Welcome to our show today. I'm going to be talking with Tracy Stoneacre. And Tracy and I both have roots in Chicago, which, we talk about it being cold and a little hard and rough there. But I do want everyone to know how much I love Chicago because Chicago is vibrant. It is a city that I have such love for it for so many reasons. So even though we talk about the cold and how that affects our constitutions and what we need to eat to feel right, I want all my Chicago friends to know how much I love the city and I love all of you. And then we get into something that so many people can relate to, which is going through a divorce and how hard it is to pull apart the lives of two people or three people or four people or more, if you count all of the relatives that are involved in this, and how so many people either started yoga, which got them in touch with their true self, and it led to a realization of, wow, I think I'm on the wrong track in life, or maybe you know that things aren't right. You know that this relationship is creating too much fear. And you get the courage to face that honestly, transparently, authentically on your yoga mat. And then you can put it out there and say, okay, what is my life? What am I going to do here? And you have that inner mental, emotional, spiritual strength to really get honest with yourself. So that is the start of Tracy's story of yoga and Ayurveda, and I think we should go over and meet her now.
Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I'm Amy Wheeler, your host. Are you needing to earn some continuing education units? Well, we have the exact thing for you. Every single Monday night, we have a Monday night clinic where we practice postures, breathing, and meditation towards a very specific theme of the month. And then we stay afterwards and we talk about the theory of why we chose what we did for that particular practice. We give you a completion certificate, which you can turn into your continuing education body. And we're growing all the time. We have a wonderful community. You can do this live with us online, or you can do it through a recording. Go to www.theoptimalstate.com and check out the Monday Night Clinic, and we would love to see you there.
Welcome, Tracy. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Amy. It's so good to be here. Excited for this conversation.
Tracy, where in the world are you?
I am based in Chicago, Illinois. I've lived here for almost 23 years now. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Transplant from the South.
Amazing. 23 years is a long time to be in Chicago. I was there for 6 years in the 90s, and it was a lot. Chicago's a lot.
Chicago can harden you. It's intense, and it's a very Vata disorienting place for sure. Yeah.
I went back a few years ago and felt that, like, whoa, I have softened up. I'm not hard anymore. I can't deal.
It's intense. It's intense. Yeah. I think my time is about up. Yeah. The cold is getting to me for sure. Yeah.
All right, Tracy. Well, you know, season eight of the Yoga Therapy Podcast is all about people's stories of health and healing and beyond. So let's go all the way back to the beginning of your story.
Well, I will say I'll start with my yoga story. Started when I was in college. I went to the University of Florida. When I say transplant from the South, it was a pretty intense move. But the Hare Krishnas used to come to the plaza and serve lunch every Thursday. And, here I am, a freshman from North Carolina, not having a clue about anything, needless to say, and just seeing these people and how generous they were serving lunch and chanting. And, of course, in my head, I was like, this is so weird, but so cool, right? Like they were just so kind and so generous. And I was fascinated with this. And so that is where I first started looking at yoga and what that was. And of course, this is going to date myself, 1988. So way before yoga was on every corner. And I kind of fell into the yoga. I drank the Kool-Aid, let's just say that. And I started researching as much as you possibly can. Once again, before internet, if y'all can imagine a time before the internet. And I really was fascinated. And so started just dabbling with yoga and doing some poses. I'm a former competitive gymnast. So it's a natural progression to go into something where you can actually use your body and harness that flexibility that I grew up with. And I was like, this is amazing. Fast forward a few years. I am living in South Florida and there's one yoga studio. And I was jumped right in and started doing my practice. And it was very hot yoga. It was Bikram back in the day and couldn't stand the heat. Thought that was yoga. I thought that those 26 postures was yoga. And then I remember traveling and found a yoga studio somewhere and we were doing down dogs. And I was like, what is this? Right. So I dove right into teacher training and started teaching pretty much right away. And of course, everybody in my family thought that I had joined a cult. What is this weird thing you're doing? And, you know, but I kept with it. And now I look at what's happening and it's just like, wow, we've come a long way. And I feel like the world of yoga has changed so much with regards to the extrapolation of asana from the practice of yoga and that becoming the yoga practice versus all the other layers of yoga that I was so drawn to, you know, the history, the breath work, all the parts of yoga that when you look at the traditional texts. So that was how I found yoga. How yoga saved me is I was going through a horrible divorce, a very abusive marriage that I was in. And I took a hiatus from teaching so that I could practice. And that was probably the best thing I ever did. You know, it's like when you're practicing and you're really in the moment, emotions will come up, things start to happen. And it was such a great release. And I say yoga saved my life. I was in a really dark place, you know, like, how did I get here? What's going on? You know, all the typical questions that we ask ourselves when we're in a traumatic situation. And it was on my mat that I found so much peace and so many answers and found the strength to actually get out of this marriage and move forward with my life.
Can I stop you there? Because I think this is the mystery and the magic. Like, how do we explain to someone who has not done a lot of yoga that you're going through a divorce, you're having a really hard time, but you go get on this green mat and breathe and stretch and focus your mind for an hour or more, and we promise you, you're going to feel better. It sounds magical, like a magic carpet ride or something, but I know so many of us that that's exactly mm-hmm. what happened, is we found ourselves. And do you have an explanation for the mechanism of what happens in those moments of finding ourselves?
Oh, I think it's multifaceted, as is everything. And it's personal. It's a very personal experience. Specifically, because of the situation I was in with my ex-husband, I was living in fear every moment of every day. And you suppress and suppress and suppress those emotions that normally you could express in a very healthy relationship. I did not have a therapist at the time. I was consumed with raising my children and protecting them from this abusive behavior from their father. And I will say, so much about coming to the practice of yoga was aligning my body, mind, spirit together and not having one off doing its own little thing. I'm a very vata person. So my mind can wander and create stories versus coming to the present moment. When I was in my practice, I felt safe and I clung onto that safety net of practice because my life outside of that was so hard to deal with. I put on a good front, you know, but internally I was suffering. And aligning myself, all the layers of my being, you know, and when I got into Ayurveda, explained so much of this, but aligning to that person within, find that strength to get out of this relationship. And what I found since then is working with a lot of women, especially of divorce, and it's a traumatic experience. As a unit, as a person, as the family unit, it takes a lot of healing. And I wasn't prepared for what that was going to look like at all. You know, no one prepared you for this. It's almost like oh, you're going to love your child no matter what. It's like you're pregnant and you're like, how do I know I'm going to love this baby? Well, when that baby's, no one can prepare you for that amount of joy and love that you can have for somebody. Very similarly, nobody can prepare you for, you do have the strength to get out of this. You do have the power to make choices and move on, and that you have a support system. You just have to tap into it. And so much about coming to my practice was aligning with my internal strengths and really exploring where the stuckness was in my own body. You know, like we create patterns over and over and over again, right? Now I know why I married this person. And just having the ability to understand, I can break free of this. I get to choose. You know, and we're very fortunate as women that we do get to choose and we can leave. It's just, you know, when you're dealing with an abusive partner, there is a lot of fear, but I really found my strength in my practice, and not physical strength. I mean, that, sure, that's a byproduct of doing the practice, especially the asana and the physical part of yoga. But so much more strength for me was found through the pranayama and those silent moments in meditation. And the breath work was just so powerful. It's that connection that we have constantly to that present moment. For me, that's what it was. It might look different for other people. Just strength.
Yes, I see with the people that I work with and my own experience is that when we're in fear and we're very oriented towards people outside of us and how do we please them to keep ourselves safe? How do we suppress our own needs so that we can meet their needs? And then you get on the yoga mat and all the chitter chatter in your mind just quiets. And it's almost like your inner voice can say, hey, you really need to get out of this. And you're kind of surprised, like, what? What? Mm-hmm. First of all, who's talking to me?
Where's this coming from? Right.
Oh, that's my own voice. But then the clarity with which it comes through to just direct us and speak truth, because honestly, we've been lying to ourselves.
Well, and you know, so much about how we navigate life is what we're taught, mm-hmm. right? I don't think the time that I was growing up, I was taught to have mind strength. I was a gymnast. I was taught to have physical strength, right? And not even back then were they talking about mind over matter. It's like, of course you can do this backflip, triple twirl on a concrete floor back then, because now when I see these gymnasts, I'm like, they have a spring floor. We did not have that. But just really focusing on the moment versus getting wrapped up into the stories that we can create about the past or the future. You know, because I was living in fear, which is living in the future, right? Like, well, what if this and what if that and what if this? It's like, well, what if I just left? It was hard.
I see so many women that they listen to their inner voice, they follow it, they decide to do whatever needs to be done. But then that's really hard work too, because we don't anticipate all the threads of the tapestry, the ones we want to take out of the tapestry, but also the ones that we didn't plan on taking out of the tapestry.
It
but
unravels all of it.
Yeah, the whole thing, ball of yarn. And you're like, wait a minute, I thought I had friends. I guess they took the other person's side. Or wait a minute, I thought my parents would be happy that I'm going to be safe now, but they're not. Or, you know, whatever, all mm-hmm. the different scenarios that can happen there.
A lot of people are fear of the unknown, right? And so there's a safety in a weird way. There's safety in the known, meaning a lot of people stay, I was one of them, way longer than I should have, because it's the evil I knew versus the unknown. Well, what's that look like? You know, how am I going to survive on my own? How am I going to raise these two kids and do what, you know, needs to be done and all of that? So we tend to stay because we know it. And there is a little bit of security in what you know. It's like, I could have predicted our ups and downs and our fluctuations in the relationship. I could never predict anything outside of that. And then it's like, well, do I want to live predicting the lows? Because those are horrible. Like, let's just have a constant maybe. And, you know, I chose the maybe over the certainty for sure. And it's taking a leap. It's really challenging. You know, especially when you have two little people relying on you, it's like, oh my God, I have to be a mom. I have to be the superhero to them. Meanwhile, I feel like I was falling apart.
I think so many people, even if they didn't have the inner strength to do it for themselves, when they look at two little people, they think, oh, I have to do it for those two.
And in the time, I thought I was protecting my kids from him. Like, if I'm with him, I can be that barrier and I can protect. And there was some truth to that, because once I left, then it's like, oh, I can't protect you from your father anymore. Now you really have to deal with the monster in the room. And, you know, they're 22 and 25 now. They've grown up. They're very smart humans now. It's pretty cool to watch.
That's heartwarming.
I know.
You think you're going to ruin your kids.
I think every parent's like, what am I doing wrong? And of course, you look back and it's like all the things that I can see in my own life come out to play because of little things I learned from my parents. You know, it's like, ah. But as an adult, we get to choose. Once again, we get to choose. Do we want to continue bringing that behavior in, or do I want to go this route? Try this out for a little while. And I will say I'm pretty opposite of my parents. Probably to a fault. You know, they all thought I was in a cult, for example. And now they're all like, oh, I'm going to go yoga. And I'm like, of course you are. Right?
Always comes around, right?
I'm waiting for Ayurveda to come around. Like, when's that?
All right. Happen? Well, let's go there. Was there some point where Ayurveda came into your life after all this yoga?
So during my deep dive into yoga, one of my teachers from India, Srivatsa Ramaswamy, was leading a training here, and he mentioned the word Ayurveda and started talking about doshas and how it related to our yoga practice. And I was like, well, that's interesting. Let me just look that up. Okay, another Pandora's box opened. So immediately dove into Ayurveda, getting my hands on everything. This was before Ayurveda schools were really gaining popularity. And so I really dove deep into the practice of Ayurveda. And as a recovering raw vegan, I was trying to turn Ayurveda raw vegan, which is hilarious when I look back.
My name is Amy Wheeler, and I am the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour. I oftentimes get asked, Amy, you've been doing this for 2.5 years now. How can we help support the Yoga Therapy Hour? And there's a few ways. Number one, you can become a Patreon member, and that is on Patreon. You can donate as little as $5 a month to the podcast. But another way that you could help us would be to join our Optimal State mobile app. That too, right now, is about $5 a month. It helps you track your gunas. It gives all sorts of lifestyle medicine suggestions based on yoga and Ayurveda. We have yoga nidras on there. We have Dharma talks on there. So you could actually benefit from getting the app and also help support this podcast at the same time. We hope you'll consider it. Go to the Apple iPhone store, and we hope that you'll download that app and start using it so that you can benefit, and so can we.
But let's even go back. Some of our listeners may not even know what Ayurveda is. So can you find that for them?
Ayurveda. So the word itself is the science of life. It is basically a personalized handbook on how to live your life, meaning you, Amy, me, Tracy, they are probably not the same. Not the same handbook. You and I probably have very different qualities that require different lifestyle habits and food requirements and sleep requirements. And the beautiful thing about Ayurveda is it looks at the entire person. Your innate qualities are a big part of that. Like, who were you at birth? What is your innate constitution? And from there, you can start to create a lifestyle program that is very unique based on where you live. You live in Minnesota, I live in Chicago. It's very, very cold. So what am I doing to balance that for me when I tend to run cold anyway? So yoga and Ayurveda, to me, there's no differentiation.
No separation, no.
I mean, we have to for our Western brains to handle it. But I personally believe yoga is a big part of Ayurveda and vice versa, because we do a lot of work with the mind. Through yoga, we access the mind through pranayama, through physical movement, through the asana. And in Ayurveda, we can access the mind through how we eat. You know, are you eating on the run and standing up, or are you sitting down and have a very intentional meal and being present that way to calm the mind, which is ideal, by the way, FYI, audience. Seated in a quiet environment, eating slowly. These are the things that help digestion. So it's not just about the physical, even though a lot of people think Ayurveda is mostly about the herbs and food, but it is so much more than that. Ayurveda is a very vast science. It even includes preconception care and dentistry and surgery. Yeah, it's very vast.
So let me tell you a hilarious story about one of my experiences with Ayurveda. Is type A personality, always packing in more than I can digest in life, metaphorically, but realistically too. And so I had scheduled a yoga training in India, and the training was like 4 or 5 hours in the morning. So I thought, well, I'm going to do a Panchakarma in the afternoons. And I got to the first day of the Panchakarma and they said, okay, you'll need to rest all day every day for these 3 weeks. You'll need to eat khichdi. You know, they had all the things and I was going to have multiple treatments per day. But in my head, I was like, well, what does it matter if I just go over to these yoga classes? That's kind of restful. You know, you can just sit there and take notes. So I went through like the whole thing, secretly going to the yoga classes in the morning and getting my Panchakarma in the afternoon.
Wow.
And of course, it doesn't work. Your system doesn't relax. It doesn't let go. It doesn't release. It was just interesting to me that, you know, this was early on in my yoga days before I really understood what was happening. So that was a failed Panchakarma, and Panchakarma meaning like a cleanse, a 3 week cleanse.
I love that, failed Panchakarma.
My fault.
What I love about that is, even though on the surface, yeah, yoga in the morning, Panchakarma, you're getting your treatments, your Abhyangas, your Shiradharas, whatever, but you knew, this knew, that you weren't doing it correctly. And that's a stressor, right? So like, how are you going to really, really rest? And I love that you brought up Panchakarma because what a beautiful, sacred way of cleansing body, mind, spirit, and really tuning into the self, the big self. And talk about clarity of mind. I've never experienced clarity of mind like I have when I've done Panchakarma. Huge things can happen. Are eating a sattvic diet according to your constitution? You know, when you go to a Panchakarma, it's prescribed by the Vaidya, you know, and that's probably one of the biggest problems I have when I do a Panchakarma, because I'm in India and there's papaya growing on the trees and fresh bananas and all this fresh fruit. My first prescription is don't eat any raw food. So even fruit. And that is a real challenge for me when I'm over there, for sure. But I follow it and it's amazing how good you feel. And traditionally, when you're doing Panchakarma, the yoga is very gentle. The West has really taken forth power yoga and yoga with weights and intense, 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 where when you're practicing a Panchakarma and you're practicing healing, we want to slow our practice down. And we really want to be very mindful with our practice and understand that our practice of yoga should complement what we're doing physically. Because like you said, when you do a Panchakarma, you're undergoing a lot of the times two treatments a day. And when you talk about it, it's like, oh, I go and I get my Abhyanga in the morning. It's an hour and a half. And then in the afternoon, I'll do a secondary treatment. Like for me, I'll soak my hands for arthritis or whatever, or maybe it's a foot therapy or knee or what have you. And that sounds luxurious, but there's a lot happening. A lot of emotions are being moved. So there can be some breakthroughs. If you're having any kind of emotional things that you're dealing with, things that you didn't think about for, I don't know, 20, 30 years can be brought up. And it's a really intense way of moving the lymphatic system manually. And when we start moving toxins around, things start getting ruffled and you never know. It can be very intense. As gentle as it is, it can be very intense for the person experiencing it. And when I took a group recently to India, we didn't even do a traditional Panchakarma. It was a very light version. But my type A woman, she was like, I want to go do da 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 da. You know, I want to do more. I want more yoga. I want more of this. And I had to explain to her, like, we're here to be, not to do. And that's really, really hard for the type A strong pitta personalities. And it was really challenging for her. And I loved it because it was really eye-opening for me, because I can be, you know, when you do this a couple of times, you're like, okay, I have dedicated this 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, however much time I'm traveling to India, I've dedicated this. I'm going to absorb in it versus the other side of that is I'm going to India. I got to get in as much as I possibly can and do as much and much. And it's like, no, let's just be, you know, it's about quieting the noise. Right. And that's really hard to do. That's where the mental part comes into play. And Ayurveda is really good about that. So, you know, maybe somebody needs a Shiradhara just to calm the mind, right?
Let me comment on that, because one of my other Panchakarma experiences, I've had several in India now. I was in Kerala and it was in the jungle. And I had my first Shiradhara, which is, you know, kind of like a 45 minutes or an hour of warm oil gently dripping onto your forehead, which sounds luxurious. It sounds amazing. I was expecting to be completely blissed out and relaxed, and it made me so sick. Like, I threw up for a couple of days. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I have. And what I've noticed is there's different ways to do Shiradhara. One way is where the oil is constantly being dripped on the forehead, just a constant drip. Which I have not experienced that type of Shiradhara, which is interesting ever. The types where I've always experienced is the oil is constantly being dripped, but the therapist is just going across the forehead very, very slowly in a very even manner. Of course, I fall asleep every time, but not everybody does. And I feel like in one of the instances where for you, if you felt sick, it's your body's resistance to relaxing and relaxing the mind and calming the mind. I mean, it's what it is, right?
A lot of sense.
Like, I'm resisting that, you know, I'm not going to take this. And Shiradhara is very special. It isn't recommended for everybody. Not everybody should do a Shiradhara. And there's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, it is a prescribed treatment during your Panchakarma. I wasn't prescribed it once, but I asked for it and got it. And I was very happy to have it. But the doctor explained to me why. He's like, well, you know, you're traveling, you know, da da da. And I was like, yeah, well, I'm traveling. I just want this because I know how good I feel afterwards. And so I was able to persuade him to let me have it as my secondary treatment one day. It is a challenging process for some people, for sure. Calming the mind. If it's not something that you practice regularly to just snap your finger and be like, oh, I'm going to be all calm and peaceful. It does not work like that. You know, it's like saying that you can go to the gym and work out one day and have a buff body the next. It takes practice. And one of the things that I, you know, teaching yoga, at the end of class, I would have pranayama and meditation. And I would never ask somebody to do 20 minutes of anything if they've never done, especially meditation, if they've never done meditation before. Like, start with 1 minute, you know? So maybe it's a 1 minute Shiradhara that might have been really good for you instead of like a 30, 45 minute one, right? Because we have to get comfortable with it first. First of all, you got to get comfortable with yourself. And I feel like that's a lot of an issue for a lot of people, is just being with themselves. If you're a very extroverted person and you have that type A where you're constantly pleasing people, when do you ever please and take care of yourself? And I find that's where a lot of people just need to start. What about you? You know, people talk about themselves, but they're really not being themselves. And it's an interesting place that we're in right now with social media everywhere, and you see people for what they put out there versus who they really are. And I prefer people, you know, let's just be real, you know? Like, I love that you're like, yeah, first time I did Shiradhara, I threw up. Like, that's real, you know? Instead of being like, oh, it was so lovely, where it really wasn't good for you.
I have to say, like, The thought of traveling to India for 2 or 3 weeks and like sitting in a small village, might be next to the seashore or something, but not spending a bunch of days shopping and going to temples and all, it is hard for Westerners to just go there and get the treatment and allow the body and mind to release what it needs to release. I think that's very hard for a lot of us.
Well, the beautiful thing is you don't have to necessarily go to India. There are Panchakarma centers. I mean, there's one in Cuba, North Carolina. You know, there are places. Now, caveat to that, it's a lot more expensive to stay in America than it is to go to India, but you'll still get some authentic experiences that you don't have to travel so far for. And I know not everybody's ready to go to India. I personally love India. The first time I set foot on ground there, I was like, I'm home. Like, I love it. And I've traveled around in southern India by myself. I've been the only blonde person on an airplane, but the people are so lovely. The people have been so lovely and kind. And yeah, you have to get past certain things in India. You're not going to see a cow walking down the street in Chicago, but you will in Delhi or, you know, wherever you're traveling in India. There are just certain things, cultural differences, and just educate yourself. It's not scary. It's just different. I say Kerala is the gateway to the rest of India. Kerala is beautiful. There's a lot of Ayurveda, a lot of traditional good Ayurveda in Kerala. The topography, you can have mountains and tea plantations and, you know, cooler weather, or you can be by the beach, like you said, and or somewhere in between. It's lovely. I love India. I love sending people to India, especially when they come back and they're like, oh, that was amazing.
We'll talk about travel in India in a few minutes, but I want to go back to something you said earlier. So you had this multi-year experience with yoga. It helped you find yourself again, listen to your inner voice, make some really hard decisions, move into a different life. But you also, way back at when we were talking about that, said, and then when I found Ayurveda, it sounded like maybe something else unfolded in you also. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So Ayurveda is based on the fundamental principles of nature that never changes, ever. You know, it's based on the five elements. You know, in Ayurveda, they combine some of the elements to create these three energetic qualities. I'm not going to go into the doshas. That's a whole nother conversation. But what I found out about myself, I can be very strong pitta as well, and very strict about what I ate and how I ate. And I knew everything. You know, I'd been studying nutrition and diets forever. And I really had to soften my approach to things. When I found Ayurveda, I was like, oh my gosh, first of all, it just makes so much sense. We're all different. And you look at people and it's like, we can take at face value that we all look different, but yet why do we believe sage Google that all of us should be taking ashwagandha or turmeric or, you know, an extract, curcumin or whatever? And it really opened up my eyes to personalized medicine, right? And to understand why I should cook food versus me trying to force a raw vegan diet into Ayurveda. Sure, raw vegan diet might be great for somebody for a very short term when it's hot outside. You know, I was trying to do it in Chicago. I did it for 4 years. I was freezing all the time and my weight was really low. And my digestion, you know, here I am a yoga teacher and, you know, horrible constipation, like horrible. And I'm trying to do forward folds. It was so uncomfortable, but, you know, I must be raw vegan. So I definitely lightened up my approach to food and nourishment. And I looked at food differently. It's nourishment. I'm not a big foodie, period. You know, when I was a gymnast, my coach told me one time that I was fat. And all it took was one time as a young girl, think about that, to really start to, I mean, at the age of like 10, I was eating like romaine lettuce and vinegar. And that was all I would eat for the day. You know, I was starving myself because I had to fit this mold of what it meant to be a gymnast. And then, of course, as you grow up to be a teenager, then you have to be skinny and marketing and all the stuff, you know, like all the stuff that bombards us without anybody educating us how to nourish our bodies versus what your body looked like. And so I grew up with that paradigm. Oh, it's a hard one to undo, but Ayurveda was really pivotal in changing how I look at food, my relationship with food, and then, of course, how that affects my practice, the physical practice of yoga, right? And how I could sit. If I'm uncomfortable in my gut, sitting for meditation is not very fun, you know? And this is the whole beautiful thing about the complementary sciences of yoga and Ayurveda is if we're eating correctly and eliminating correctly, and we have these lifestyle habits in place, our practice becomes effortless. And ultimately, the goal is to access this. And without all these, this noisy body of cracking and the bloating and the all the other things that come along with an improper diet and improper lifestyle, meditation is easy. Actually, it's actually really easy. So that changed everything for me. It actually helped me deepen my practice in yoga as well. And then I came back to teaching. So with a much new, better sense of what it meant to teach yoga and be a guide for other people.
You know, it's so interesting because I think so many people in the yoga space are using yoga as exercise to stay thin, or they're using Ayurveda in a kind of an incorrect or inappropriate way to modify their diet to look a certain way. And it's interesting because both are saying just the opposite, like nourish yourself properly, right? And allow yourself to be who you are instead of trying to be something else. It's kind of twisted how we taken the ancient teachings and twisted them to get an outcome or a goal to look a certain way. So I don't know. I just like to point that out because I do think we have a lot of people listening that this has been their experience. And believe it or not, even if they've been doing yoga for 5 years, this may be the first time they're hearing this, that, wow, that's actually not what we're doing here.
Yeah. And what I find interesting is when you're eating according to your constitution, and, you know, there's something to be said about feeling light in your body. And I understand that 100%. I want to feel good. I want to look good. As I get older and wiser, certain things aren't as important to me as they were before, but I still want to be presentable and, you know, I don't want to scare people off. But I also want to be strong. And for people that grew up with the same mentality of barely eating, there's no strength in that, right? You might be skinny, but what's underneath that is pain and discomfort. Constipation was my lifetime. It took me up until about 8 years ago, did I not finally figure it out? You know, through trial and error and me letting go of my ego and what I thought was right versus live according to nature. If you're going to eat raw food, eat it in the summer when it's fresh. Yeah. Other than that, you live in Chicago. It is brutal. As the constitution of a lighter, wispier, colder person, balance that with soups and khichdi. I mean, I have become the queen of khichdi. And understanding that I take time out of my life to do a panchakarma once a year. That's my time to really prepare my body, detox my body, rejuvenate my body so that I can continue to maintain that throughout the year. But I'm taking that residual, you know, we're all bombarded by toxins. I mean, we live in a very toxic environment, whether it's what you're watching, hearing, smelling, eating, breathing, however you're taking it in, input equals output. And I think that as long as we're continually taking the time and putting it in a container, we don't want to detox all the time because that can be depleting. It's a process and it's a pretty sacred process in my opinion. And maybe the first time you do it, it takes 3 weeks, but maybe every other time after that, it takes two. You're just uncovering stuff and removing the stuff that isn't serving you, filling the body with nutrition. And then you go on with your life with these new better habits. Every time I go to an Ayurvedic center, I'm like, ooh, I'm going to take that back. So I'm incorporating little habits every single time. And the more you do it, the more you're bringing back and the more you see changes happen, even with these tiny little things. I remember the first time I scraped my tongue. Every day, I have to scrape my tongue now. It's just like non-negotiable to scrape the tongue before anything goes into my mouth. So these little things and, you know, rinsing the eyes and the Trifla water and the CCFTs and all the little things, and they start to just become part of my habits. I don't think about them anymore. I just do them. And I don't have digestive problems anymore. I don't have constipation anymore. I'm not on any thyroid, anything. Yeah. So what a difference, right? Like, what a difference.
All those tiny lifestyle shifts bringing our systems into balance and make for a totally different trajectory.
Yeah. 1 degree can make the world a difference. It can be the difference between LA and San Francisco, right? Where are you going? You know? Yeah. And the beautiful thing about Ayurveda and yoga and all of it is it's constantly evolving with you, meaning I was just in Mexico. So of course I should probably change a few little habits because I was in Mexico, hot, 84 degrees every day versus I think it's 6 degrees here. And just understanding that transition between the two, right? And just preparing the body for that. And I did a really good job preparing to go. I didn't do as much of a good job preparing to come back, but just understanding I probably could eat different foods down there than I would here. You know, and so I was able to be outside every day there. Here, it's really hard to be outside, but just how do you connect with nature on a daily basis? Because that is so important. Whether it's just sitting, you know, for those of us that look at computers all day long, just take at every hour for 2 or 3 minutes and look out the window. Look out the window, right? Like, is it daylight still? Do you even know? I used to teach at an admin at a very large hospital, and people were working in cubicles. They didn't know what time of day it was. It's almost like being in Vegas at a, at a casino. There's no windows for a reason, right? They don't want you to know what time it is. And so really syncing up to circadian rhythm, which is a huge part of Ayurveda. It's very important. Sunlight is important. Moonlight is important. Yeah.
So you feel so strongly about this, but now you've started a travel company to help other people experience this. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it was actually out of my last trip to India. I was sitting on the beach and I was about to lead a retreat. The women were coming in the next day. And I would just sat there and I was like, God, the ocean is gorgeous. You know, it's so pretty and hot. You know, my perfect place is being on the ocean, sitting by the beach. And then you turn around and, you know, there's tires and trash stuck in the cliffs and remnants of humans behind me. And I'm just sitting there and I'm also in the back of my head have this, what's going on in the world? And it's crazy and politically speaking, and people are still feeling isolated. Connection is being lost. And I literally just felt like, God, the world needs a panchakarma. You know, I just said it in passing in my head. I was like, and then I was like, wow, the world needs a panchakarma. You know, like imagine if that happened. So I started my travel company. It's a travel representation company for Ayurvedic resorts around the world. And I named it Ojas, which is a very powerful word and a word in Ayurveda. But I started it with a very strong belief that a better world starts with panchakarma. And I was like, how do I do that? How does that happen? Right. And so within a couple of days of eating well and having a sattvic diet and moving my body and practicing, you know, getting my shirodhara and my abhyangas in every day and walking the beach, the clarity of mind, once again, it's unbelievable. And this was birthed. Right. I didn't think. I just started writing and I just started writing and writing and writing. This was like at 2 a.m. one morning. And by the end of it, I was like, I don't know what this is, but I have to go to yoga now. So, you know, through that experience, I molded this into a representation company for Ayurvedic resorts around the world. so that I can bring the voice of Ayurveda into the wellness travel space that isn't existing right now. If you look at the trends in wellness travel, for example, they always list the same ones, right? People want a bespoke, personalized experience. They want transformation. They want nature. They want to be cared for. And I'm just like, Ayurveda, Ayurveda, Ayurveda. You know, it checks every single box, every single time. And it doesn't get more personalized than that. I get the gadgets and the tech and all the biohacks that are out there. And that's really fun. I don't think it's necessary. When you sit with an Ayurvedic practitioner and doctor every day, and he or she listens to you, reads your pulse, looks at your eyes, looks at your nails, all your, you know, the diagnosis that they do, it's a personalized plan, right? And your journey at that center for those 2 weeks will be very individualized to you. And most Ayurvedic centers are in nature to begin with. They pride themselves on having the connection to nature. Most of them grow their own herbs for the formulations that they're using in your treatments. It just doesn't get more high touch experience than that, right? And I know how it has changed my life, and I've seen how it changes other people's lives after experiencing a Panchakarma. And I want to be the voice of Ayurveda travel. I want everybody to go to an Ayurvedic center somewhere in the world. Like I said, they're not just in India, but to really experience what Ayurveda is, I think it's really valuable to go to a center and live it for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, if you can.
So if someone wanted this experience, they would call you up and say, I'm willing to go to India or I'm not. Here's how long I have. What would you recommend? And you would literally connect them to a place.
Yep.
So it's not even groups, although I'm sure it could be.
Well, I do a lot of education. I've written 2 ebooks for travel advisors and for retreat leaders. What I found missing is the education component. You know, a traditional Western travel advisor, if they're not understanding what Ayurveda is, they're not going to recommend it to their clients.
Right.
So if they're educated and they're like, my client wants personalized nature, willing to travel long distances, can take 2 weeks, go to an Ayurvedic center. You will have a, you know, commitment for life because they'll want to go back every year. And the same for retreat leaders. It's a great backdrop to a retreat. So if you're working on personal development or, you know, whatever your strength is when you lead retreats, there are Ayurvedic centers where there's only one treatment a day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it can free up the afternoon for workshops and things of that nature. But there's no real hub of information where this lives. The research that goes into it, and I've done it, it's very time consuming, and then people give up. But it's a great opportunity for travel advisors to send their clients to India. Ananda, for example, in India, I mean, it's super high end and luxury. You don't have to sacrifice luxury, you know, but you can also go to a really cute boutique one on the ocean and have a really good experience too. So, you know, and it's just a matter of being a matchmaker and really understanding what the client wants and what the property offers. And so that's OGIS.
Just so everybody knows, I did put some pictures on the screen here for those who are watching this on YouTube, because we always release our episodes both on audio on all the major podcast platforms, but then a few months later, we put them on YouTube. So your website is www.ojasglobal.com. So OJASGLOBAL.com, OJAS Global. Yeah. And let's finish with just telling our guests, what does OJAS mean?
OJAS is basically the essence of vitality. It is kind of a byproduct of a lot of processes that happen in the body, but some people liken, it depends on where you study, some people liken OJAS to our immune system. And the way that I see that is if our immunity is strong, we have this vitality within you and people can see it. You either have it or you don't, you know, I mean, to varying degrees, you know, when we pass, all of our OGIS is depleted. And so we can see that life, you know, there's prana, there's ojas, and then there's tejas. And prana, I think a lot of us are familiar with yoga, you know, prana moving that energy through the body. Ojas is that representation of that level of vitality and energy that you have. So it is your radiance and how maybe people feel when you walk in a room, you know, like, whoa, like, ooh, I want to be close to that person. You know, I want some of what that person's got. And I will say, when I was raw vegan, I was depleting my ojas. It took so much for me to digest food. I had no energy left over. And so understanding how all of this comes to play, it's pretty special. So my goal is to bring the ojas back. Everybody, let's build our ojas. It is our resilience. It is our vitality. It is our immunity. And ultimately, I think that helps us be adaptable.
Thank you, Tracy. It's been such a pleasure to get to know you and learn about your life and how you healed yourself. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. This has been fun.
Thank you, Tracy, for being with us today and sharing your story. I'm sure that it's given people hope that they too can make it through these hard times, especially with the help of yoga and Ayurveda. One thing I want to tell our audience is that I have landed in a place in life that I could not be more thrilled about. I'm the new department chair at Maryland University of Integrative Health, and I'm the chair of Yoga Therapy and Ayurveda. So I want to invite each and every one of you to check out both our master's degree in yoga therapy, as well as our certificate course in Ayurveda. If you would really like to have a university experience to really learn about the basics of Ayurveda and how it can become a personalized medicine for you, I invite you to come over to www.muih.edu. Just type in yoga therapy or Ayurveda, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at all the amazing things we have going on. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you to our guests today. And if you've ever thought about being on the podcast, we would love for you to come and tell your story. This podcast is not just for the famous people or the people who've written a book. This podcast is for everyday people like me and you to tell our stories of health and healing and beyond, as yoga, yoga therapy, and Ayurveda has helped us. So please feel free to contact me if you have a story you'd like to tell on the podcast about your journey. There would be nothing more pleasant and pleasurable than getting to interview you and have you on the podcast. Don't be shy. You can do it. We're waiting for you to call. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.